Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2888. Yeah, Representative Rosenbaum and Patty Whitney. Would you, Whitney?
Whitney Wise.
You need to learn to write better.
I did. I didn't write it.
No, I did. And I used to work for doctors. So it's
how she picked it up, I guess.
I'm sorry.
Patty, could you take this too? Yeah.
Okay, and committee, we're going to, the intention of the chair is to move this bill to Ways and Means, so we will try to keep questions to a minimum. I think we all understand it, but please go ahead.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you so much for hearing our bill first thing. We're very pleased that you are entertaining House Bill 2888, which we think is a solution that is to a huge problem that I think all Oregonians, and I'm sure members of the committee, are aware of. We hear a lot about the huge problem with hunger in the state of Oregon and the fact that we are ranked first on a list that we would not like to be leading, but are leading in terms of hungry families in our state. Families and children and adults. And the good news about that is that there is something that we can do about it, and that is what is contained in House Bill 2888. We have had quite a bit of success already in doing outreach to let people know that they're eligible for the food stamp program, which is really the first line of defense against hunger. There was a pilot project in Multnomah County that increased participation there by 22% and a statewide outreach effort that was able to increase participation by 65%. But we know now that we have many more people that are eligible but just don't know it, and that we could be accessing a lot more federal funds if we just found a way to get the word out. So that's what our bill would do. And in fact, by allocating funds at a state level, we would be able to access so much more in federal funding, because the food stamp program is totally federally funded. In fact, we could get about 1,000-1 increase in the federal funds we'd be bringing in by a fairly minimal allocation of money at a state level. So we really believe that this is something that will benefit the whole state and alleviate a lot of suffering, and I don't think you will find very many programs that would have this kind of return for our investment. Even in these hard times, I think this is a choice that we should make. So we really urge you to forward this bill on to Ways and Means, and hopefully we'll be able to see it come back to us and reap the benefit of it. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Patty.
Yes, I'm Patty Whitney Wise, the director for the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force. We've been involved in the last 3 years worth of food stamp outreach. There has been a tremendous increase. The state is seeing an increase of more than $16 million a month in additional food stamp benefits coming into the state, partly due to the outreach efforts that have been conducted. We know there are still a number of rural communities, especially where additional targeted outreach would be very helpful to get those working poor families onto the food stamp program. And in addition, there's a whole new group of legal immigrants who were cut off of the program in 1996, who were added back by Congress last year, that also are a group that we are looking to do outreach to put them back on the program if they're in low-wage jobs. You do get a very good return on your money. In addition, for every dollar in food stamp benefits that go to the local community, it generates another $1.92 in economic activity. The governor's office is interested in this proposal. They're interested in looking for private dollars for this coming biennium, since the state is in such a budget crunch. And so we ask that this goes to Ways and Means, and the governor's office will work with it at that point to put in the appropriate language so they could receive private dollars. I hope that you'll support the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Any questions?
And, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I identified myself, but
I know who you are.
I am State Representative Diane Rosenbaum and a member of the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move this to Ways and Means for the due pass.
Representative Barker moves House Bill 2888 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
The bill should pass.
One would think. Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Excused. Aye. House Bill 2888, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Close the work session on 2888 and open a work session on 3570.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3570. Establishes the prescription drug purchasing program in the Department of Human Services to purchase prescription drugs in bulk for the state and other governmental agencies. And I won't read any further because we have a dash one amendment dated 4-11-03 that basically replaces the bill. And the amendment makes modifications to the current Department of Human Services Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Programs. What it does is current statute requires has eligibility criteria for both public and private prescription drug benefit program. Public is being removed from those eligibility criteria so that folks can immediately move into the senior drug assistance programs. And this has a referral to Ways and Means.
And colleagues, I moved this up on the schedule because I was so excited because Katie King is going to testify.
Do we just...
All right. We
have it. Mr. Chair, so you don't want to save the best bill for last?
Oh, good one. Thank you.
Well, we do. Actually, yes, I did.
Okay.
But we thought, you know, if you've got the pressure of all the other bills behind you, it may keep you from going into talking about your first book or your second book or whatever. So
I'd be glad to talk about my book.
I know you would. Please go ahead.
Okay. Chair Cruz and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katie King, and I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Liaison for Health Services and DHS. And first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Mona Sanderson for letting us use her bill as a vehicle for the Dash 1 amendments. We sure appreciate it. And thank you also to Representative Cruz and to Sandy Teeley Circa for the amendments and for holding the hearing. We are very excited and enthusiastically support this bill with the Dash 1 amendments. House Bill 3570-1 amends the Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program to allow seniors who have had public drug benefit coverage, such as the Medically Needy Program or OHP coverage, within the previous 6 months to be eligible for the program. And it does this by eliminating the word public from the eligibility requirements in statute. So right now, the statute says that a person who has had public or private drug benefit coverage within the previous 6 months is not eligible for the program. And this bill also adds an emergency clause, so eligible seniors can apply for the program right away. In February of this year, the budget shortfall resulted in the elimination of the Medically Needy Program that provided drug benefits for about 8,700 people. And many of these folks are seniors who would be eligible for the Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program, except for the fact that they had public drug prescription benefit coverage. Drug costs for this population are really high, and it's a hardship on these seniors to have to wait the 6 months to apply. This program would allow seniors to buy their prescription drugs at the Medicaid rate, which the department estimates is about 10 to 20% lower than the retail price. And this is a program funded by the enrollment fee paid by the participants, so it costs the state nothing to expand the eligibility requirement. criteria. And as a final note, I just wanted to recognize the role that pharmacies have played in this vital program. About a third of Oregon's pharmacies voluntarily participate in the program as a service to their respective senior communities, and we are very grateful for their partnership. So, Mr. Chair, I'm ready to answer any questions.
Any questions for Representative Anderson? Make it a really hard one.
Enrollment, Katie?
Representative Cruz and Representative Anderson, the enrollment fee is $50, and that helps pay for the program cost. And we estimate that seniors save that amount fairly quickly by getting the 10 to 20% discount.
They are paying for the drugs. They're just paying for your enrollment fee covers your departmental administrative costs. Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, one thing that I did want to bring up that's kind of a drawback to the program is that we don't have an advertising budget. So we estimate that there's about 100,000 seniors out there that would probably be eligible to participate in this program. And the problem that we're having is getting the word out. We've been doing it by press releases as we've been rolling out by counties. And we started in February of 2003, and we'll finish in May of this year. But we're just trying to get the word out so people that need this program will have access.
Just come to Josephine County. We can take care of a lot of those folks hard in one shot.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Katie, is this referenced on the new website, the new drug assistance website, this senior program?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we just rolled out that new website for the reduced and free drug programs that the pharmaceutical companies have. I would suggest that this be linked to that website also. I mean, if you're looking for relatively cheap advertising, that would certainly be one of those places. So, glad to help where I can.
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones to House Bill 3570.
Representative Mona's Anderson moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 3570. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, is this the Ways and Means?
Yeah.
I move House Bill 3570 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass.
Representative Monis Anderson moves House Bill 3570 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any? I'm learning it. I've been working on it all week. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
All right.
Aye.
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 Excused? Aye. House Bill 3570, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Close the work session on House Bill 3570. Open a work session on House Bill 2970. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2970 is relating to funding for the safety net clinics. It appropriates money from the general fund to the Department of Human Services for the operation of the safety net clinic. It declares an emergency and is effective July 1, 2003. This is an appropriations bill. Thus, it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2970 to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a due pass.
Representative Monis Anderson moves House Bill 2970 to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative
Anderson.
Aye.
Representative
Barker. Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson. Aye.
Representative Wilson. Excused. Aye. House Bill 2970, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Close the work session on House Bill 2970. Going to open a work session on House Bill 2987.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2987, we heard, received testimony on it in the last couple weeks. We have, sorry, it's March 31st.
I was satisfied with the last couple weeks.
At that point, and at that time, we had a dash one amendment at the request of the Insurance Pool Governing Board that added language at their request relating to the eligibility trigger into OMIP. What we have before us now are the dash two amendments that at that time we heard from Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. They expressed an interest of having an amendment that clearly details the requirements of pre-existing conditions, which we do have in the dash two. You should have a hand engrossed version of that bill so you see where that fits in the bill. And that is, this does not have a referral to Ways and Means. And I believe they're in, oh, Len is here. Answer any questions. Mm-hmm. Or speak to the meeting.
Questions?
The back ones, right? All right, we need to do them both. I think we got to do them both.
I do too.
Yeah.
Because they work with us, right?
Yeah. Question, Representative?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I can't remember the bill, and I'm wondering, is this the one that will hurt small businesses? That
that's what it's here for.
Is Katie still here? Can she come and give my testimony? She feels better than I do. What a question. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. Mr. Chairman and Representative Mons Anderson, we do not believe that this bill will hurt small businesses. In fact, we believe it will stabilize the small group market by allowing the rates to float to their appropriate level. As we explained in the hearing, we currently have a 2-to-1 rate band, which is causing younger groups to heavily subsidize older groups. What this will do is broaden that rate band to allow a more accurate reflection of their risk. Currently, in small group in health insurance, you can only take into account their age, their geographic differences, and family composition, if they have dependents covered or if they're single. So those are very, very limited rating criteria. Under the existing law, the younger groups are those that we believe are not being insured, and part of the reason is cost. And if the market is allowed to a greater variance in those rate bands, we believe it will stabilize that market, because we are losing numbers in small group and we're losing numbers in individual coverage. That's happening fairly rapidly right now. So we believe these amendments will actually encourage more people not only to get into the insurance market when they're younger and contribute dollars to the system, but it will also keep them there over time. Now, it's very difficult to sell these products to a younger group.
So when you say the bans increased, now there could be differences in premiums 400%?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mons Anderson, it could. Right now there's a 2-to-1 rating ban. This phases into a 3-to-1 in 2004, which means somebody could be paying $100 and somebody $300, that variance, to July 1 of 2005 to a 4-to-1, where somebody could be paying $100 and someone else $400.
And just follow up, and who, just explain again, who would be then more likely be paying $100, the younger, and the $400 would be those who have, who are really sick? I mean,
No. You cannot, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullins Anderson, I'm sorry. The current law requires us to guarantee issue small group policies. You cannot base it on the health of the individual. You can only use just very limited rating criteria. So right now, what's happening, and you can imagine in a 2-to-1 rating, my son who is working for me in the station is 23 and had to get his own policy. He's paying $120 a month for a $1,000 deductible policy. I'm paying almost $1,000 a month to cover three of us. And the reason that other policy is based on the age of his old parents. So the rate bans in their narrow width right now is raising the cost of these younger people who cannot afford to pay the price, and they're subsidizing this other group. We'll continue to have rating bans, but there will be more variation, and then the market interplay and competition will provide an incentive not to increase the rates, including the fact that we have to have an actuarial basis for these. We're not just out to penalize someone.
So just one other follow-up thing. So what you're basically saying is the premiums that we have now, I mean, they could go up, depending on the market, but you're saying we're going to actually have a lower, with this, we'll actually be able to have even lower premiums, in a sense. What I was thinking is, okay, we're all here, and it's going to go up and down.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Mills Anderson, assuming you need $200 to pay the claims of this group, and currently you have to charge them one of them 50 and the other one or 75. I'm sick right now is the reason I can't think. But currently you have to charge the younger one more than their true risk in order to carry the other one. Because this rate band puts a ceiling on that rate. So indeed it would mean a lowering of some premium.
Yes. You.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mons Anderson, my name is Leonard Hagen, Legislative Affairs, Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. The way our actuaries, because we've asked our actuaries the same question, how would this affect rates and for which groups? And at a 50,000-foot level, what I was told is insurance is the law of large numbers. And when you bring more people, younger, healthier people into the pool, what we've seen over, I'm going to back up just a little bit here, what we've seen over the last 4 years, the individual market has declined 10%. The small employer market has declined 15%. When I say declined, I'm talking about those that are actually purchasing the coverage. So the markets are declining, and part of that, I couldn't put it all on rate banding. We played around this several years ago with a number of underwriting factors. And what Regents is wanting to do and some other health plans is to get some of those arrows back in the quiver, so to speak, those underwriting tools. And with respect to rate bans, if you can get a younger, healthier population back into the pool, then over time you're going to see overall rates decrease. if the only people in the pool are the older and less healthy individuals, rates are going to be higher to cover those individuals. That's the idea behind rate banding, is to get those younger, healthier people back in to help share those costs. And then with respect to the first question you asked, we do believe this bill will help to shore up the individual and small group markets that are currently declining.
Just for the committee, we've been working on the healthcare system in Oregon for what, 3-4 days now, and one of the things we have been trying to pay attention to is not just the Medicaid side of healthcare, but the private sector side of healthcare, and we've seen some fairly dramatic things happening there. I mean, we're losing folks on that end as fast as we're losing them on the public end, and what we are attempting with this and a couple other bills is to try to mitigate some of that loss, and so we can try to get some stability in the system. I think it's Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for my education, rate bands. It would seem to me that the rate band would be the 20 to 35 or the 65 to 80.
Mr. Chairman.
Could you explain the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson. Those are age bands. As opposed to rate bands. What you just described are affected by the rate bands. As those ages are in increments, it pushes them close together so that this younger group is subsidizing this group. And at a 2-to-1, if you look at those rate charts, this is small group coverage, but if you look at how individual insurance is rated as your premium increases with age, I apologize for not having a chart like that because I think it'd be very demonstrative of this problem, is when the rates are allowed to go with the risk, they broaden significantly from age 23 to age 64. So if you artificially constrain those too much, and we believe the 2-to-1 rate band is that, then the flexibility to offer, I mean, you just cannot offer these younger groups an attractive product under that situation.
Could I follow that? Tell me how, for instance, you're talking about waivers here a little bit. I'm not sure whether I'm relating. How does high blood pressure or diabetes or any conditions relate to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, that provision is found on the first page of the bill and the amendments, the dash two amendments. And understand that now we're talking about individual policies on page one. The other two amendments, including rate bands, refer to small group policies. This language would allow an insurer to offer an individual product with a waiver of not less than 6 months and not more than 24 months on a specific health condition. If currently those people are being assigned to the high-risk pool, OMIP, what this is an attempt to do, if somebody is trying to cover their family or, for that matter, even themselves, and they don't care about a 24-month waiver on a knee or a hip, they could buy this product from the commercial market at a lesser price than going to OMIP. Now, if they're only offered the policy with a waiver provision, they can still count that as a declination of health insurance and go to the OMIP pool. So if they want coverage for that pre-existing condition in just 6 months, as they would in OMIP, they have that right under this bill. So we're not taking that choice away from the consumer. We're just giving them one more choice.
Good. And part of our concern there is the expected expansion of OMIP and our ability to afford that in the current subsidy structure. So, I mean, and it's a real and genuine concern. So this is a way, hopefully, to mitigate that and also offer people a choice that's more affordable than what they're getting. So, Representative Dalto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Powell. What about a concern from folks that say that, on the low end, for a younger workforce, you may get a pretty modest decrease in the amount that you can charge per employee for that policy, but at that modest decrease may come at a cost to a pretty substantial increase to an older workforce?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dalto, that is one of the confinements that the marketplace brings to carriers. If you, first of all, you must have an actuarial basis for rating. So we're not in the business of just soaking somebody. And quite frankly, part of the problem with these rate bands is it's forcing us to charge one group a lot more than they should be paying because of the confinement of these rate bands. I don't think that health plans are going to go out and try to design plans to keep people who are 55 or 60 off their rolls. Indeed, that would be foolish, because in many workplaces you have a mix of ages in that work group.
Just one follow-up.
One follow-up.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Did you say, Mr. Powell, that you had to have approval for your actuarial decided rates? Did somebody look over your? I think you have some sort of system, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Balto, yes, all of our rates have to be filed with the insurance division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions of this panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Tomei would like to question Michael Morger. Hi, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. Well, thank you.
I'm Representative Tomei.
Michael, I'm assuming you're familiar with the letter written by Joel.
Through the chair, yes, I am. And for the record, I'm Michael Morger. I'm an analyst with the insurance division.
I'm concerned about some of the issues that he brought up and some of the issues that were brought up by Lynn Marie Kreider regarding just what Representative Dalto was talking about. It seems to me that this could be a real problem for small employers, as he was mentioning, who are employing older workers, that employer is going to be priced out of the insurance business.
Through the chair, Representative Tomei, that is a concern we have as a regulator, and that's one of the reasons that we've talked about a sunset provision, in that it's very much a fluid dynamic in the market right now, and this is something we'd like to be able to look at and really gauge what it's doing on both ends of the market.
And that's not part of the amendments, is it? The sunset is 2008. It's repealed in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And is DCBS is going to be reporting back?
I'm advised that the sunset is only on the waiver.
But I would also point out that the legislature can revisit this issue anytime they choose.
But that might be difficult for the legislature to do if it's not brought before its attention.
And all due respect, Representative Tomei, if there was a problem with this, I'm sure it would be brought to the legislature's attention.
I'm concerned. I think the whole intent is to expand the availability and affordability of health insurance, but I'm not sure that this is the way to do it, and I'm concerned that it may have negative effects that are going to be working against it. Do you have any other concerns?
No, through the chair, Representative Tomei, I think as we've had a number of discussions in the agency, we recognize that it is a very difficult market for small employers right now, and our position, just to restate, we're not in opposition to this legislation at this point in time, but we do feel like we would appreciate some more direction from the legislature in terms of a specific reporting back, so that when time came to collect information from the insurers, there's a clear directive from you to us that we can then communicate to them.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Representative Westland.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2987.
Got to have the ones first.
Well, I move the Dash 1s into House Bill 2987.
Thank you. Representative Westland moves the Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 2987. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the Dash 1s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2987.
Representative Westland moves the Dash 2 amendment into House Bill 2987. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the Dash 2s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2987 as amended to the floor of the House of Representatives with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Westland moves House Bill 2987 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be voting. Thank you. I'm going to be voting against this. I would be much more comfortable if it did have a sunset date. As I said, I'm concerned that it's going to have consequences that are going to be working against the purpose of this bill. And I wish that we had a chance to revisit it.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
Yeah, I think this bill is a good bill, but I also would like to see what the effect would be on the marketplace. And if the Department of Consumer and Business Services could follow that and report back to the legislature to see what the trends are, and more for the condition, what is that called?
The bank.
No. The pre-existing conditions. And just to see if there is a difference. That would be my preference. I know that we don't have an amendment for that, but.
And time is a factor, but that could be something. As far as reporting, I think that's something that maybe could be addressed on the Senate side to make sure that we have the appropriate type of reporting in the legislation. And the chair would be more than happy to do that. And.
Mr. Chair, in order to make the committee feel better, I would promise to put a sunset clause affecting the rate band, to include the rate banding. And if the insurance division, I don't want to obligate the insurance division to do a report because that will give it a fiscal, but if they can report back without a fiscal, we would not be opposed to that being added on the Senate side.
Okay, let's get that on the record. And Michael?
Yes, Michael Mortar with the Insurance Division, and consistent with conversations I've had with our administrator, I think that we could accomplish that.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, then we can have reasonable assurance that those two issues will be addressed on the Senate side with this bill.
Okay. With that.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Strong eye.
Aye.
A happy eye.
Aye.
I'm going to be yes here, but I reserve the right to be an enthusiastic yes on the floor.
Oh,
it's okay.
Lord.
It's only going downhill from here.
Sedated eye.
Just, yeah, very sedated eye.
Yeah, it passed.
You know, we were doing really well, and then Westland showed up.
Yeah, but you're having a hell of a lot better time.
I am. But I don't have enough orange M&Ms in my cup. House Bill 2987, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair will carry. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2987 and open a work session on House Bill 3153.
Which one? 3153. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we heard House Bill 3153 this morning. This is requiring license to practice hypnotherapy except under limited exceptions, establishes a licensing program for hypnotherapists, creates a hypnotherapy licensing board in the health licensing office, establishes procedures for the board, confidentiality requirements for communications between the hypnotherapist and the client, and it imposes penalties, civil penalties up to $1,000 per violation of the act, punishes the violation of the act by a maximum of 30 days imprisonment, $1,000 fine, or both. We have in front of us 3153-2. I apologize, I got it like minutes before the meeting. It basically is a replacement, replaces the bill. We can go through it together if you wish.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, questions.
You okay? Well, why don't you come up, because it's in your shop, so.
And also, earlier this morning, Sue gave us just kind of an outline of her shop that might help with this.
A little history on this. Those who were on this committee last session will remember that we had a bill. In fact, it was the bill that was the original bill, because we just redrafted that and then worked on the amendment. To try to accomplish this, ran into all sorts of problems and issues with it, and Dr. Skolnick and his associates have worked with Sue in the interim to figure out a way to do this that's appropriate. The chair has thought for a long time that this is a viable form of medicine, and that... But then I also see all these things on TV, or, you know, they'll come and you'll get notices about they're going to hypnotize 1,000 people and get them to grow hair or whatever, and although that would be interesting. and so we're just trying to find some way to put some efficacy into this thing, and I think we have finally got there, but please go ahead and explain. We'll do a walkthrough of the bill. It's the chair's intention to move it, by the way, so.
Chair Cruz and members of the committee, did you want me to speak to
the amendments? Sure, please.
The Dash 2 amendments, basically, in reference to Representative Cruz's remarks, make sure that this conforms with the current model of the health licensing agency. And it picks up the existing language and conforms it to some of the issues we talked about in House Bill 2325. And I gave you that one-pager attached to my testimony so you could kind of get a general idea of how the Health Licensing Office works without going through the entire procedure. What this bill does, just to give you background, the Health Licensing Office was established in 1999 as an oversight and centralized service agency for licensing and regulation. It provides these services for numerous health and occupational licensing boards and businesses. The agency's fundamental purpose is to create uniform licensing and regulation for these professions in conformance with a standard mission and goal, and that is to build a consumer advocacy organization that protects the public, one that supports positive business environment and provides excellent customer service. Now, I want to point out that the two major things that I, for the committee's understanding, that are different than any other board in our office are, please excuse me if my testimony does not relate the exact sections, because as Sandy said, we got the bill at the very last minute. There is a
Section 5, subsection 5 of that section that allows the agency, as was provided in testimony this morning, to collect grants and contributions for the operation and the initial operation of the program. And then another section, a new section again, is Section 22, which allows the agency to actually has a sunset clause, but allows us to gauge whether or not the licensing base, after we collect some history, is going to be able to support the program without the grants. Are there any questions?
I'm lost. You're lost? I don't see a 22.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, her first reference is on the amendment, page 3.
Just that.
Like lines 15 and 16, where she spoke to the accept and expend donation, contribution, and grants.
Right.
Correct.
Correct.
And then
very last page.
And then the very last page, basically, this the whole bill is repealed in 2005, unless you come forward
right.
then
and that language
remove that language.
Right. It gives the opportunity for the agency to report whether or not the licensing base can carry the program.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Move the dash 2, Mr. Chair.
Quick question.
Sure.
How many people are typically on one of these boards?
Yep. This one has 5.
Yeah, I know this one has 5. How many typically
Representative
are on
Cruz, Representative Tomei. In our office, we have boards that range from 5 to 7, with the standard being 7 in our office. I think that's a manageable size, and that tends to be the size that the historically has been the numbers on boards.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? We need to adopt the dash 2 amendments, and this bill does go to Ways and Means.
I move the dash 2.
Representative Barker moves the dash 2 amendment. I'm going to go get him. Okay.
Mr. Chair, 3153,
yes.
You know, I don't have the original. I didn't bring my bill, unfortunately. But didn't the physician or the hypnotist who was speaking with us, he talked about their fees will be covering the cost, right? Do I remember that correctly?
Mm-hmm. But and they still have to appropriate them.
We have to have the expenditure limitation, so we have to send it to Ways and Means so that can be established.
Got it. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Any discussion on the dash twos? Seeing none, the dash twos are adopted.
Move the House Bill 3153-2 to the floor via Ways and Means. Would you pass?
Yes, we.
Those of us up here did.
Representative Barker moves House Bill 3153 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Barker.
Aye.
Representative
Dalton.
Aye.
Representative Monahan.
Aye.
Representative
Tomei. Aye.
Representative Weston.
Aye. Aye. House Bill 3153, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Thank you. And we'll close the work session on 3153. And we're going to open a work session on 3156. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, 3156 was the last bill we heard this morning. This is the food handler bill. Again, we did get the amendments from Legislative Council, and I really do think they need a round of applause because they have really been responding to our requests. We have the dash threes. I think you folks have the dash threes. I'm not sure if the copy made it into mine.
I got the dash threes.
Okay,
I got
good.
The dash
everybody who has reviewed the dash threes, I faxed it to the agency. I've heard back that everybody is in approval of the threes. They've made the changes, and they are workable, ready to go. And I don't know if anybody wants to speak to them, unless anybody has questions.
Does anybody have questions?
Do we have anybody who's in opposition to these?
At this point, I don't believe so.
All right.
So the chair would entertain a motion on the dash threes.
I will move, Mr. Chair, I move dash threes.
on House Bill 3156.
Okay. Representative Barker moves the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 3156.
Okay, there.
Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the Dash 3s are adopted. Let us go.
Well, you know, it says it's prepared to waive the means.
That's what I have on my SMS. But
Ways and Means? There's a fee increase.
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking.
I'm the chair and Karen's the speaker. There you go.
It doesn't have it.
It doesn't have it.
No. So that's a mistake. Don't let us know. It's got a fiscal.
Okay. The fee increases how much? It's all agreed on. I mean, it's not like it's a new appropriation. What do you think?
Technically, Mr. Chair?
I don't like doing things technically.
Okay, then in that case, you know, I think this could find its way to the floor without any problems.
Okay, I mean, we passed the bill last week to the floor with a $100,000 fiscal, but... Yeah, the Committee of Standard Ease.
I move that House Bill 3156 with the Dash 3s be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barker moves House Bill 3156 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Anderson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just a question regarding the position in this bill of the county health inspectors. Are they contracted then, or does it become a state function totally? Can we have some testimony on that?
Either Gordon or... Let's let Gordon do it. He represents counties.
It varies.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And this is the accomplishment of this bill. Chair accommodated several delivery systems.
Members of the committee, Gordon Fultz, Association of Working Counties. It is now an intergovernmental agreement between the public health authorities, which are the county boards of commissioners, and the state to deliver the services. Was that your question?
And it will continue to be?
And it will continue to be as long as there's agreement. I mean, obviously, it's subject to the agreement. But if you're a public health authority at county level, then this has to be a component of your public health authority responsibilities. I'm making, you understand?
I understand.
So in other words, counties that have the responsibility for public health, they are the public health authority. This what used to be a delegation is now an intergovernmental agreement, which will be a piece, component of that responsibility.
So the check will come from the state or from the county?
This is fee-based. Fees are collected at the county level. There's a remittance that goes back to the state for the oversight functions, the state functions. But the fee-based, which was a piece of this, and the fees are being proposed to be raised for the state. Right now there's a number of counties where the state is the responsible authority for the inspections.
Okay.
In 2005, that will revert to all of the counties will have that responsibility as being a public health authority. But they have the right to set their fees with the scales that are in the bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you.
Well, that was as articulate as I ever heard Gordon Fultz.
do we have a motion? We do, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay, is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto.
Can we have Gordon back just for one moment?
An encore? Is that what you're asking for? Okay.
No, he's really...
Well, in that case... That's a 70s thing. Don't worry about it.
Oh, God!
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No more M&M's.
Gordon, I think I know the answer to this already, but to the constituent who writes that this person is concerned that this bill eliminates local input and involvement in food safety issues, I don't think that this bill does that. I think that if you have an intergovernmental agreement and you're contracting back, I think there's very much input at the local level because the local folks, the county folks, are at least in Marion County would be doing this, right?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, the amendments that you have adopted basically allow a county to have or a public health authority to have a food service advisory committee. The previous statutes required that committee, and in some cases they were there, in some cases they weren't. In this case, it permits it, but I think most counties that have it would probably intend to continue those.
Thank you, Chair.
And I'd also point out that at least in the case of the chair, who happened to be the sponsor of the bill, some of the original comments I got on the bill would no longer be germane with the amendments.
Right.
So,
Mr. Chair, quick question. Gordon, have you ever stolen property from a representative's office?
Sure. Representative Westland, not in my... my recollection, no, sir.
It's just unimaginable, isn't it?
I don't think that would be good for my credibility.
And then have you ever gone so far then as to deface that property?
Oh, absolutely not, Mr. Chair. Absolutely wasn't.
So what do you think the punishment should be for an individual, particularly if he's part of a noble profession?
Oh, my gosh.
Professional advocates. I mean, maybe you could just contemplate that as the individual who may or may not be guilty of such an egregious crime may contemplate.
Capital Club ought to take that up.
That's all, Mr. Chair. I wanted to pick.
And Representative Westland, thank you for keeping the discussion relevant to the bill.
Yeah.
We have on the floor, ladies and gentlemen, a motion. And is there any further discussion? The motion on the floor is on the bill as amended to the floor with the due pass. So. With no further discussion, Mara, how are you doing over there? Doing good? Okay. Would you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Do we want to discuss this on the floor or not?
You know, Mr. Chair,
it's a good.
We've got a lot of bills backing up. I don't see any problem with this going on the consent calendar. Unless someone wants to brag on the very, and I mean this sincerely, I mean the very collaborative effort between the department and the counties and the association.
What we want is the bill passed through the House and onto the Senate. So Representative Westland moves that House Bill 3156 be placed on the consent calendar. Seeing no objections, so ordered, and I will... 3156 having received the constitutional majority is declared passed, and I'll close the work session on 3156 because where are we going? I don't know. Where do you want to go?
Well, let's do a good bill for you.
Dental hygienist.
Oh, God.
You want to go to the dental hygienist or the nursing board?
Yeah, let's go to open a work session on 2324. Let's do an easy one. They're all easy, aren't they?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2324 was brought at the request of the Oregon State Board of Nursing. It requires that the Board of Nursing elect a president-elect from the membership of the board. There are no amendments.
Mr. Chair.
And it has three words changed.
I move House Bill 2324 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 2324 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
I'd just like to point out the chairman runs a nice railroad here.
Representative
Dalton.
Aye.
Representative
Anderson.
Aye.
Representative
May.
Aye.
Representative
Westland.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2324, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Mona Sanderson moves that House Bill 2324 be placed on the consent calendar. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And I will close the work session on 2324. Now we're cooking with gas. Okay, let's open a work session on 3157.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you'll be pleased to know we have yet another dental bill.
Yes.
House Bill 3157, we're all having fun.
Is that a dental fee or a dental bill?
We heard this bill last week. The parties went off, came back with some amendments. You have the dash fours and the dash fives. The differences between the dash fours modify current language on oral screenings to include dental assistance in that process and procedure. It allows the screening results to be provided to the parents or guardians of the minors. The dash five is that portion of the amendment, but in addition, on the first page of the bill, deletes the latter part of line 15 all the way down to 18, which is an extended dental hygienist definition. Those are the differences, and Paul Cosgrove and Jane Myers are here too.
Please come up and sign in. And so the dash ones, twos, and threes are no longer in play. The dashes in play now are the fours and fives. We will do one, but not both.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove representing the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association. Staff has already explained to you the difference between the dash fours and dash fives. I just wanted to briefly state that the dash fours incorporate a variety of issues on which all of the parties, there are really three parties that were involved in negotiating this bill, that being the Board of Dentistry, the Oregon Dental Association, and the Dental Hygienist Association. The dash fours are all the areas in which we were able to reach consensus, and we resolved all of the issues that you heard in your testimony about oral health screenings and how that would be managed, and limited access permit hygienists and their initial education. Those are all resolved. The one issue is, as staff mentioned, the sentence on page one that starts at lines 15 through 18 that adds a sentence that dental hygiene would also include acts or procedures determined by the board, that's the Board of Dentistry, that are included in the curricula of dental hygiene schools accredited by the Commission on Dental Accreditation of the American Dental Association or continuing education courses. I just want to make three quick points to say why we believe the dash fours, which would have this sentence included, is the appropriate way for the committee to go. This is not a radical idea. First of all, the approval of these acts or procedures would be by the Board of Dentistry. It is a 9-member board with 6 dentists. So dentists will have a great deal of influence, obviously, in the approval of these additional acts or procedures. Second of all, it would be based primarily on the curricula that is approved by CODA, the initials CODA, of the American Dental Association, which, after all, is the Oregon Dental Association's national affiliate. A dental association, not a dental hygiene association. And third, and I mentioned this in the handout you have, this mirrors language that ODA itself asked to have introduced and added to the definition of dentistry back in 1999. If you look on page one of the bill, the definition of dentistry is at the bottom of the page, and if you turn over to page two of the bill, you'll see this same clause, other acts and procedures as determined by the board in the curricula of dental schools approved by CODA of ADA. So it's something that was done in 1999 for the dentists, and we're asking it to be done now for the dental hygienists. I would just point out one reason. It's language from a statement made to this committee back in 1999 by the ODA in support of addition
section of that language. It said it would provide the Board of Dentistry broad guidelines to understand and interpret its statutory authority. The guidelines are based on education, and I think that better than I could do it myself summarizes why we think it needs to be added to the definition of dental hygiene as well. The dash fours are supported by the Oregon Dental Hygiene Association, by the Board of Dentistry, and the Dental Health Coalition. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Oh, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I would also like to thank both the chair and committee staff for their help, but particularly Representative Anderson, who worked with the interested parties for several hours over several days to work on these issues and working out the language on the dashboards that is all agreed. So I appreciate that very much.
Jane?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jane Myers for the Oregon Dental Association. And I think what you have in front of you is House Bill 3157, and I've just pointed out what the difference is between what the ODHA's amendment does and what the ODA's amendment does. Taking out the last sentence, which starts on line 15, the reason for that, in our opinion, is this really is not necessary language in the law. But if you look at the definition of dental hygiene already, right here on the bill it says it means that portion of dentistry, which dentistry is a very broad term according to the language. That includes the rendering of educational, preventive, and therapeutic dental services. And then it gets kind of specific. But, I mean, how broad do we have to get? Educational, preventive, therapeutic, dental services. Our association is not in favor of adding more language to laws that are already very broad, and the board has lots of rulemaking authority. So we would not suggest that that was a good amendment to make to the bill, and we'd support the dash fives. I think that you begin to see a trend. I know the legislators generally do not like scope of practice bills, and so it's convenient to move it all back to boards for rulemaking, and over time you get more and more of that. Yes, we did ask for a change like this back in 99, but it was dealing with dual degree dentists who had medical degrees and a dental degree and were oral surgeons and lots of, well, 4 years of university, 4 years of dental school, and a specialist training, which was in addition to that. So there were some serious questions about procedures and how those things were learned and the new oral surgeon procedures that we were trying to clear up. And we felt like the board maybe needed a little okay in the statute to go there. But this one seems like we got a narrow field, a lot of language already in there. So that's why we're asking for a different. But we agree on everything else. I think we've reached a conclusion on everything else in the amendment. And we also thank especially Representative Anderson for his gracious and patience.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Yeah, I think we had a very good discussion period and came together pretty much on everything except this one sentence. And because this is not going to affect access to patients, I would like to ask access for patients. I'd like to move the dash five amendments.
Representative Anderson moves the dash five amendment to House Bill 3157. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
I just want to make sure that I understand the difference. That's the only difference between dash four and dash five is that sentence.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, shouldn't we move the dash fours first?
No, we might move either the dash fours or the dash fives. Right, because they're identical except for that one sentence. So it wouldn't make sense to do them both.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Tomei.
No, this is Tomei.
No. Oops. It's only 6:30.
My apologies, Representative Mona Sanderson.
Oh.
I think you got to apologize.
And to you also, Representative Tomei, and to anybody else who I've offended in the last 5 years. God, that would be a lot of people, wouldn't it? Okay, yeah, probably would be.
I would I accept your apology.
You?
But it does not.
All the ships at sea.
So I just wanted to, of course we don't have the board here, but that this could be done by rule. Is that the...
Yes, you may.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bonus Anderson, the board supports this because, in fact, it doesn't believe the broad authority as stated by Ms. Myers is sufficient. You will note down in the definition of dentistry, it similarly starts with a broad sentence, yet the dentist believed this additional clause was necessary in 1999. And that's why the board supports adding this sentence.
But... my question wasn't answered.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't believe they believe they can address some of these issues as procedures and acts changed by rule without this change. If you make this change, then they can. And, of course, that rulemaking is a public process with everybody involved, and people can raise issues about the particular act or procedure, and they also can set standards for which dental hygienists have to take which training in order to do these particular procedures.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I, because Mr. Cosgrove is speaking for the board, which isn't here, I guess I disagree with him. The board has rulemaking authority, and the first sentence of that definition is pretty clear about just how far it goes.
Any further questions or discussion? The dash five amendments are on the table. Are there any objections? Representative Monis Anderson objects to the dash fives?
Well, just for the clarification of rulemaking, you know, and the board isn't here. That's the only objection.
Representative Dalto?
Just noting my objection to the dash five amendments.
Let's just be clear on this. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Dalto?
No.
Representative
Anderson?
No.
Representative
Lee?
Aye.
Representative
Weston? Aye. No. The dash five amendments, having received the majority, are adopted. Representative who wants to make the motion? Representative Anderson will make the motion.
I'll move the House Bill 3157 with the dash five amendments to the floor with the due pass.
Representative Anderson moves the House Bill 3157 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, call the roll.
Representative
Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Dalto?
Aye.
Representative
Monis
Anderson?
Aye.
Representative
Tomei?
Aye.
Jeffrey?
Aye.
Boy, she almost forgot you.
Did you notice that?
No, she almost, well, never
mind. We want this consent, or?
Yes.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3157 be placed on the consent calendar. Any objections?
Not really, but if we're going to put it on, I'd carry it. Consent is fine.
Consent is fine. With no objections, 3157 is placed on the consent calendar, and House Bill 3157, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And we will move to opening a work session on House Bill 3396. Tom Holt, do you want to come up and talk to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record.
We are addressing dash threes, I assume.
No, dash one, 3396.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong darn thing. Never mind.
What bill?
3396. Members of the committee, requires the Department of Human Services to pay pharmacy providers for up to 90-day supply of prescription drugs or durable medical equipment or supplies. Prohibits DHS from imposing a voluntary copayment on prescription drugs for certain medical assistance recipients. We have a dash one that changes some of that language. And okay. I think everybody has.
Yeah, I don't have. Okay.
And this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Yes, it does.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt with the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. The amendment that's been passed around rewrites Section 1, Paragraph 1, such that the Department of Human Services, as the Oregon Health Plan, would pay all pharmacies for the same number of days supply for any particular product. It's a level playing field issue. We have some types of pharmacies right now that can do 90-day supplies, but others for dispensing the same product can only do a 34-day supply. And we did discuss this language with the department, and they indicated that would be okay with them.
Tom, before you go on, I'm looking at that. So it says the Department of Human Services shall pay a pharmacy provider. I'm sorry. Who is enrolled provider in the Medical Association Assistance Program for, and then we're deleting the rest of that line in line 6. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Chair Cruz, Representative Tomei, for the same number of days supply and so on from there. So instead of saying up to a 90-day supply, then you carry on to the amendment language.
Thank you.
The second part of the bill would prohibit the department from imposing voluntary copayments for prescription drugs. As you all know, it's been an issue of considerable discussion for your background. This evolved out of the last session. The legislature's intent was that pharmacies would be left whole for the co-payments. Unfortunately, during the interim, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services said, no, we couldn't do it that way, but we still have the co-payments. There is a substantial fiscal impact to eliminating the co-payments, which is why this is going to Ways and Means, and the department has expressed the concern that, you know, Ways and Means take care of that.
Although I would suggest the fiscal impact isn't as great as some might assume that it would be, because I don't think the copays are probably collected at the level that it was assumed they would be.
Mr. Chair, it has been difficult in a number of areas.
Right.
Mr. Chair, but we're keeping in number 2 there, right?
Yes.
So we're talking about voluntary copays, right?
Well, right now, we're talking about eliminating the voluntary copays that currently exist that were part of, what bill was that last time? Was it 519 or 519?
Mr. Chairman, I cannot remember the bill number. It was at the very end.
Not in this bill.
The elimination is in this bill. What we're eliminated is something that was instituted either by law or by rule, I think.
Mr. Chair, I believe it came out of the budget.
Yeah. It was a budget note?
Yeah.
Okay. Last session.
Yes.
It must be a good thing. Representative Bates likes it. Jim, do you want to come up? Or seeing how you're here and you've waited all this time, and we appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim Edge. I'm the Acting Assistant Administrator in the Office of Medical Assistance Programs in DHS. Tom just gave most of my testimony for me, actually. He commented on the fact that there have been Dash 1 amendments to this. Actually, and the department has not had a chance yet to do the fiscal on the Dash 1 amendment, so we'll go back and do that and see what the fiscal impact still is on that. The second part of this, the elimination of the voluntary copayments, as you've already discussed, that's not the OHP2 copayments. That's the smaller $2 and $3 copayments that was instituted as a result of a budget note from the last legislative session. Unfortunately, that would leave a budget hole for us if those were eliminated, because there was a calculation done and the appropriate amount of savings was removed from the DHS budget. So to eliminate these copayments would create a budget problem, and that's the concern of the department.
Okay. Just for the committee's information, the co-payment structure of the health plan is in question at this point in time anyway, as going forward into the future. The chair considered for a long time whether this bill as it was necessary or whether it would be part of a more global
remake of different things. It fits in with the scope of where we're going. And we decided we can go ahead and do this as a separate issue, but it will it fits in kind of with the vision of where we're going. It will certainly have a fiscal impact, and which is why it's going to Ways and Means. So they can decide whether indeed this is the direction they want to go. But anyway, questions?
Yes.
Representative Mona Sanderson.
When you said that there will be an impact, what's the ballpark figure?
The fiscal impact that was calculated, Representative Cruz and Representative Mona Sanderson, the fiscal impact that was calculated by our budget folks was $5.4 million total funds in fiscal 2003-2005. $2.1 million general funds.
Wow. I'm going to ask this question since there is
yes, Representative Tomei.
Why is this bill necessary?
Chair Cruz, Representative Tomei, we believe the bill is necessary because out of last session we had a directive to do from the legislature to do the co-pays in a certain manner so that the pharmacies would not be left responsible for the co-pays when people either were unwilling or unable to pay them. These are very low income people that are subject to this, and even though the requisite approval from the federal government did not come, the policy still went ahead, and so therefore we thought it was necessary to have a bill so that we could be clear that legislative intent is followed. It was our view that legislative intent was not strictly followed on this issue out of the last session, so therefore we needed a bill.
It was. The budget note, notwithstanding the budget note, the waiver steering committee got into a long and lengthy multi-session heated debate over the whole issue of co-payments and their place in the Oregon Health Plan. And we were incredibly divided on that issue. In fact, the final vote on the whole co-pay matrix in that group, which adopted the co-pay matrix, which we're going to eliminate, was 11-10 vote. That's how divided, and this was something the governor wanted, and he put together the group and barely had the votes out of the group he put together. So
he wanted the co-pay, is that what you're saying?
And basically it was at that point in time co-pays were looked at as a way to balance the books. You know, like it has nothing to do with this bill, but for example, the $250 hospital copay, which is pretty much uncollectible for somebody with an income below 100% federal poverty, was just a cost shift, but it was a way to balance the books for the health plan in a rather subverted sort of way. So, you know, and I really don't need to get into this whole issue, but I still have kind of a bee in my bonnet about the whole darn waiver application steering committee, but I don't need to subject you guys to that.
Chairman, move the dash line.
Okay. It's a good way to shut me up. It really is. Representative Barker moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 3396. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendment is adopted. I apologize for my little tirade there.
Well, I thought you were through.
I should have been before I started, actually.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 3396 of the dash one amendments to the floor via Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Barker moves House Bill 3396 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei.
Maybe I'm tired or grumpy or whatever, but I'm concerned about a $5.4 million hole. I have a hard time recommending that.
Well, that's a projected number, and the fact is that that's something that the Ways and Means folks will figure out. So,
okay, I'm going to be voting against it.
Okay. Call the roll.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3396 having received a constitutional majority is declared passed. Close the work session on House Bill 3396. And committee will stand at ease for a moment.
Did you want to carry her on that?
No, it went away as me. And just for the committee's information, House Bill 3431 and House Bill 3574, we have not received the fiscals on them yet, so we're going to hold them because it's our intention to try to move them to the floor instead of Ways and Means. So we'll hold them over till Friday. Hopefully we'll have the report by then so that we can do that. So I'm sorry, Joe, I didn't know you were...
Oh.
Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2884. Sandy?
Mr. Chair, 2884, we heard earlier this morning, extends the exception for the certificate of need process to closed system long-term care facilities. We have the Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment was moved by Representative Westland and adopted by the committee.
Okay.
So we do not need to readdress.
Okay.
That.
It would be the chair's intention to send this bill to the Committee on Ways and Means. So I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2884 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Westland moves House Bill 2884 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means with a be passed recommendation.
We already did that.
Earlier today.
With a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westland.
I just want the record to reflect that this exemption, the extension of the exemption, deals only and specifically with long-term care facilities built after. And there's a blank in the date, whatever it is, I'm fine with it. But I want to make sure this deals with long-term care facilities, not other medical facilities of any other kind.
And that is correct. Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 No. No.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2884, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2884.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westland.
If I could just point out, I am exceptionally grateful of you holding this bill to the last to make certain members of this body.
Well, and I thought it was appropriate after... You know, I will join you on your report to the Capitol Club. So,
and are probably a witness on Mr. Ames' police report, on my activities. So, okay.
Okay. Having no further business to come before the committee, folks, thank you very, very much. What?
Announce that we're not going to meet next Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. Just before we adjourn, this committee will not be meeting next Wednesday or Friday because the chair has to be in Boston.
Whoa, what are you doing in Boston?
NCSL.
Great.
Eating beans.
They're paying for it. What the heck? So, no further business to come before this committee. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
All right, baby.